Down to Business on Newstalk.
Thanks to Bank of Ireland, helping you deal with the business of Brexit.
So last week in our industry review, we got a huge reaction to our interview with travel agents who've been greatly impacted by the pandemic. It did get us thinking that the nation's pilots have also seen their sector of the economy decimated, with foreign travel almost completely wiped out. So, to get an insight into how pilots may have been affected by the pandemic, I'm delighted to be joined this morning by Captain Andy O'Shea. He's the founder of the Airline Pilot Club and he's chairman of ESA Aircrew Training Policy Group. Philip Smith is the safety director and senior flight instructor at the Atlantic Flight Training Academy School at Cork Airport. And Margie Burns is the managing director of Aviation Selection Consultants and mental health wellbeing company Flourishing.ie. So you're all very welcome to the programme. I might start with you, Captain Andy O'Shea. Maybe you might just tell us, and we all know that things aren't great in the sector, Andy, but how bad are things for Ireland's pilots right now?
Well, as I said before, buddy, they're extremely difficult. We have, between Ryanair and Aer Lingus and other airlines, with approximately 7,000 professional pilots licensed in Ireland. And obviously with the airlines reduced in their schedules down to single percentile, like 4 or 7% at the moment, many, many pilots are being furloughed and are not getting regular access to flying. Now, in fairness to the Irish airlines, they have kept contact and have kept some sort of employment relationship with the great majority of Irish pilots. And so therefore, for those pilots who are remain within the structure of an airline and the training and checking processes that an airline provides, life isn't too bad.
Okay.
But there's another category of pilot where it's extremely difficult.
So what are the mandatory requirements for a pilot who isn't flying, Andy? What's the obligation in terms of them keeping their license around hours and simulator work and that type of thing?
Yeah, so it's primarily a simulator and theoretical training process that they have to go through. The regulations require them to revalidate their license every year and their type rating, so a 737 or an Airbus, say, they have to revalidate that once a year as well. And then there are a plethora of other qualifications that have to meet the requirements of revalidation and renewal. So for pilots who are, as I say, associated with an airline, the airline's rostering systems will still produce the roster that will get the pilots into the simulators and they'll be able to keep their qualifications current. But pilots who aren't fortunate enough to have remained in employment have to do all that themselves.
Is that, how expensive is that?
It's very expensive and it's extremely stressful. So, you know, as part of a podcast that myself and Margie did, we talked to two pilots, one of whom was still associated with an airline and then the other was on his own. And that guy had to spend about 1,500 euros and an enormous amount of human effort to find a flying school and a simulator organization that could provide him with the necessary regulations, make sure that that was properly approved, get himself there. It was over 1,000 miles away, in COVID lockdown conditions, and then try and pass the test.
Right.
So, like, it's extremely difficult for
very challenging. Let's bring in Margie Burns, who you mentioned there. Margie, what about the mental health of pilots? It's something that you've, I know, written a lot about and commentated quite extensively on. Can you maybe just give us a snapshot of where pilots are feeling, I suppose, mentally now?
Hi, Bobby. Yes, look, their mental health is just so important. But we have to remember that even before COVID, pilots were, if you like, experiencing increasing job strain in terms of their performance, you know, because their performance has been monitored, not just on their flying, but on flight time and fuel and all of that. So I suppose they're expected to operate at 100%. That's the expectation. And when you demand perfection, it's very difficult for pilots then just to humanize just the stress and the anxiety when they've been operating in a you know, functioning at a very, very high level. It's very hard to admit it. And just to point out as well, there's a big issue with our industry in terms of addressing the mental health and well-being of pilots. We have the ICAO manual for civil aviation medicine, and that has a mere 3 references to assessing well-being. And I did a review of the IOSA standards manual earlier this year as part of a study I was doing, and that revealed no references at all to mental health and well-being. So we're really to arrive at a pandemic. We're on the back foot because the industry and the regulators and, you know, all need to do more in terms of the mental health. So another factor we need to consider is that 95% of the male population globally is made up of males. And we all know that men are less likely to report mental health issues than females. Yeah. So that's also very worrying.
Okay, we'll come back to that in a second. Let me bring in our third guest, Philip Smith. Philip, you're very welcome to the program.
Thank you, Bobby. Nice to talk to you.
And you. Can you tell us a little bit about your operation, Philip? You're the safety director and senior flight instructor down there at the Atlantic Flight Training Academy. What about the number of students coming through your organisation? What about the implications for the sector that, you know, if there's no work out there, people would be less inclined to seek training?
Yeah, that's very true. And that's very understandable as well, too, because when people are going to embark into the career, they have to look at their career options and how quickly they expect to be placed, and what they have fairly high job expectations. Usually we would graduate about 100 pilots a year, and what happened was when the lockdown measures came in last March and April, obviously our operations were substantially scaled back, and as a result that delayed the completion of training. But we're in a slightly different situation in so far as that we're training, the people we're training today to become the pilots of tomorrow are looking at careers that won't be starting with the best will in the world, if somebody started pilot training at the beginning of February, the course duration for a full-time course is about 18 months.
Right.
Which means they won't graduate until closer to the latter part of 2022. So given that lag in the meantime as the aviation sector recovers, then we're hopeful and we're very confident the airline sector and the job requirements will pick up as well too.
But the category of pilot that just qualified, say maybe a year ago, they must be in a terrible position because they haven't got any, I suppose, flight time with a commercial organisation, and they've probably, invested quite a lot in their own training. Would I be right in saying that it's very challenging for them? Particularly.
You certainly would be, yeah, that's spot on. But up to March of last year, the average time from graduation to job placement for pilots was usually less than about 3 months. It was a very positive industry to be involved with. And as a result of what's happened, of course, that's all been changed. So all it means effectively is that certainly for the pilots who have graduated in that course of time, then yes, the job market isn't open to them at the moment. And that means that it's very hard for them to stay current. But we recognise the difficulties they have. And of course, our job isn't finished since we know that our graduates are actually placed with their airlines. But in the meantime, what we're doing is we're providing free simulator training, recurrency training every 3 months, just to keep their skills as sharp as they can be, so that when the job market does pick up again, they'll be ready to go then as well too.
Yeah. Go on, Philip.
Yeah, just one other point I'd make as well too is that the issues we have at the moment are all in the short and medium term. Now, I don't want it to sound glib or anything like that, but you have to look further down the field. For anybody coming into the industry, say in their late teens, early 20s, retirement age is 65, they've got a lifelong career ahead of them. So if you look at it in the longer term, it doesn't change that much. The short term, certainly, they're all taking a hit. And the surveys that have been done by industry leaders over the last few years, they projected that the pilot requirement for extra pilots globally over a 20-year period would be in the order of about 800,000, of which about 150,000 would be for Europe alone. Now, all that's changed with the current situation is that timescale. The demand will still be there because the pent-up demand and the ongoing demand for travel will be there. All that's happened is that time frame has shifted. So it's pushed back by the 2 to maybe 3 year period.
Okay.
Again, in the longer term, the prospects we're quite hopeful will be good.
Okay. I have lots of texts coming in, 53106. If you want to ask anything about a pilot or the pilot sector, one says, we don't know how lucky we are to have the job that we have. I've had a fella decorating my house for the last 3 days. I got chatting to him, and it turns out he's a Ryanair pilot on the PUP. He's now decorating to try and pay his mortgage. That's very sad to see, Philip, is it not?
It is, of course, because that pilot or all the other pilots in that situation, they're either doing nothing at the moment or they're doing jobs that wouldn't be their number one choice. But what I think it does do is it demonstrates their resilience as well, too, as a group. That they're always, you know, proactive, and they want to be, they want to stay busy, and obviously earning a living is the main priority. But I think what it does, it just demonstrates their resilience, and they, like everybody or most people in the industry, recognise that yes, it will recover. If you take Ryanair as a brilliant example, you know, when other airlines have been laying off people and cancelling orders for aircraft, Ryanair have driven on.
Yeah.
Not alone, they not cancel any orders for the Boeing MAX. They've increased the order by some 70 to 80 aircraft. So the vision that they're using is tremendous because they're not looking at the here and now. They're looking at what's going to happen in the future. And this is history repeating itself because down to the decades, the industry has been faced with all kinds of challenges going back to the 70s with oil shortages, conflicts in the Middle East, different financial crises globally, and every time it's bounced back, and when it bounces back and gets even bigger again. So again, my emphasis would be on not what's happening now, but what's coming down the line over the next few years.
What about the issue, Andy, of pilots leaving the sector? So if, and it's, you know, it's a logical conclusion, is it not, that if I can't get work in a particular skill that I'm qualified for, I will seek work elsewhere. Is that something you'd be concerned about for the industry, that, you know, that so many will be forced to leave and then there might be a shortage when things get back to some form of normalcy?
I think there will be a shortage. I absolutely endorse what Philip said there. All the projections are positive, but we have to be very sensitive about how we articulate that. So in similar surveys, one of the leaders organizations have estimated that there are 40,000 pilots who are globally who are redundant right now. And they reckon that at least 7% of those aren't going to come back. And then on a more long-term basis, in the over 50 years of age element in the pilot population, around 4% of those are expected to retire or leave the profession every year for the next 10 years. So it sounds like there is a brain drain, and indeed there will be sadness to see all that experience go, and, you know, all the safety quotients that they bring to the day-to-day operation. But those places have those opportunities can be filled by schools like AFTA and others in Ireland. And
yeah.
So these retirements, they represent a fantastic opportunity for Ireland and for pilot training in this country, because we have so many assets available to us. And as part of our amazing performance in the aviation industry, where we have punched so far above our weight across all the sectors of the aviation industry. It is sad to see these people go, but therein lies a 10 to 20 year opportunity in this country to provide excellent pilot training.
Yeah. Another text in says, a big thank you to all the pilots who brought the PPE equipment from China and they're now bringing in the vaccines. I think that's important to say. Thank you for that. That comes in from Simon. Margie, can I go back to you?
Sure.
You know, both Philip and Andy are talking there about a resurgence, you know, once things, you know, the vaccine and all sorts, we would hope things out. But is there, in your view, things like business travel, is that likely to be impacted for many years? That because so many people now can see that one can conduct an element of international business via Zoom or Microsoft Teams or whatever, that there may not be that demand for business travel ever more?
I think there will always be a demand, but for sure we're seeing new ways of, excuse me, of working, and people have become more familiar with using the various Zoom and Teams and that type of thing to conduct business. It will take time. There's no doubt about that. I mean, I don't have the answers to that, but I think once we get confidence back, which is absolutely important, that people, you know, will want to travel again. And yeah. So it's just a time issue more than anything. But I do believe that, you know, there will be a return from a business perspective as well. But I think it will take time.
Maybe last word to you, Philip, down in Cork. In terms of your own operation in the Atlantic Flight Training Academy School, are you able to operate now with social distancing and everything? In other words, can your business function?
We are, yes, obviously under different circumstances and different conditions as well too. The full-time course is divided up into the actual practical flight training and also in ground school. And the ground school component represents 6 months of intensive study and exams. And during that period of time, there's no flight training undertaken by the students. So there's about one-third of the course dedicated just the ground school itself. Now, traditionally, what we've done is it's always been done in the classroom environment. But with the current situation, we've moved that to online facilities, and it's working extremely well for us.
Okay.
So we think that what will happen in the future is we'll probably end up, when we do get back to the full classroom operation, it'll probably be a blend for convenience, if nothing else, to do some of it online and do some of it in person in the classroom.
Okay.
And with the classroom arrangements, we've introduced, we've extensive mitigation measures in place, and we've also fitted screens. So we're cocooning each of the students in their classroom environment as well too. So that's
okay,
working very well.
Necessity is a great man to sort things out. So well done for that. And we wish each of you well in what is a very challenging sector. Captain Andy O'Shea, the founder of the Airline Pilot Club, Philip Smith from the Atlantic Flight Training Academy School, and Margie Burns, Managing Director of Aviation Selection Consultants. Thanks very much for joining us this morning.